money to hell. Welcome back. That'll be the day. Buddy Holly and the Cricketers. Today in 1957, Buddy Holly released that song and became one of the famous late 50s rock and roll songs. So we are now about to talk to Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. He's in studio. He's running for governor of the state of Maryland. Good to have you with us, Lieutenant Governor.
Mark, it's great to be on. In fact, I was sharing with you as we were walking in. The first time I was on your show was a little over 8 years ago when Governor O'Malley and I announced our ticket.
That's right.
The 2006 gubernatorial race.
That's right. It's been a long time.
Sure has.
And yesterday was Memorial Day, so I'd like to start off by thanking you for you and all the other men and women who have served, that even though it's the day to remember those who were killed, and died in service. I do want to honor all those who served at that time.
So thank you.
Appreciate that. So, Lieutenant, let's just get right into it. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Sophia, going to come to your call after my first question, and then I'll ask the second question. Then Jonathan will come to your call at 410-319-8888. We have emails here, two emails to read, and we have a lot to talk in the 40 minutes or so we have with Lieutenant Governor. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's begin with, there was a editorial, I guess you've seen the editorial in the Sun paper on Friday.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So we'll start with that. I read it, actually, to be very frank, it was a holiday weekend. I was doing other things, so I only read it this morning. So took a small break. But what they did was, in this article, criticized you for your support of what they said was disgraced State Senator Ulysses Curry for re-election. And I'll quote here. They said he was censured by his colleagues 2 years ago for using the prestige of his office for private gain. Largely because he enjoyed the protection and goodwill of Senate President Mike Miller and his colleagues in the state Senate Democratic Caucus, and that they're accusing you, saying Mr. Brown aligns himself firmly with the good old boys of Annapolis by endorsing him. The Shoppers Food and Pharmacy paid him $250,000 to advocate on their behalf with state regulators. He was acquitted, but he was acquitted because people said one testimony was an effective. Mr. Curry was too dumb to be corrupt. And that Curry's fitness for public office it was a censure, and that he's never apologized to the people for what he's done, and that people are pretty shocked that you actually endorsed this man for re-election.
I served 8 years in the House of Delegates in the 25th District. Senator Curry was the senator, and when the state Senate censured him a few years ago, I think that was a very appropriate a punishment, and also stripped him of his leadership. Senator Curry, like all elected officials, will present himself to the voters in 28 days in the primary election, and voters are going to have an opportunity to view his experiences, his record, his judgment, as well as this particular incident that resulted in his censure. And voters will make a decision as to whether or not he should continue to serve.
But I guess the question was that they were raising it, and many people might raise, Lieutenant Governor, is why you would endorse somebody who really disgraced his office, and even though he might have served with distinction on some levels for all those years, he really blew it. I mean, taking $250,000 from a company to push their interests in the state government is a pretty profound thing, given where people look, how people view politicians in today's world and corruption. So people are kind of shocked. I mean, why did you endorse him?
Right. And I think the voters are going to have an opportunity to do that. I served with Senator Curry for 8 years, and during those 8 years and since, there are a number of things that he's been able to accomplish on behalf of the residents of the 25th District, as well as Prince George's County. The record level of funding in schools, the work to bring a world-class regional hospital center to Prince George's County, the work that he's done with County Executive Baker on the transitioning neighborhood initiatives. So the voters are going to be able to look at that and decide whether or not that record of service and what he's been able to do on behalf of the people that he represents outweighs the underlying conduct that led to, and I think appropriately so, to a censure and to his no longer being chair of the Budget and Tax Committee.
But you feel comfortable with endorsing him, even though he might have done these great things, what he did to you is absolved and done.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, he's been an effective legislator, and voters are going to have to consider that as well as the underlying conduct that led to his censure and removal from power.
Let's go to the phones. We have a lot of calls. 410-319-8888. Sophia, you're on the air.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Sophia, go ahead. Yes.
Okay, sorry. So, hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Love your show. I have two questions for Lieutenant Governor Brown. I really am curious to know why he's skipping the debate tonight on Fox 45. I'm an undecided voter. I'm really curious to know why he's sitting this one out. Also, I'd be curious to know, you know, if he can give an example of, you know, what he's personally done to improve the lives in Baltimore City.
Sure. Thank you for the question. The campaigns, mine with Gansler and Mazur, back in February had agreed to do three debates. And as you may recall, we had a televised debate in the National Capital Region about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Right.
And we're going to have a televised debate of the three candidates, although there are five on the Democratic ballot. But for me, Attorney General Gansler and Delegate Mazur, next week, Monday, that's going to be televised on WBAL in partnership with MPT. And that's what we had originally agreed to do two televised debates. We're also doing a radio debate next week as well. So I'm looking forward to that debate for the Baltimore media market. Also, keep in mind that that's in addition to the over 20 forums and debates that were not televised over the last 9 or 10 months or so, 9 of which were in the Baltimore region, trying to give, of course, voters as much opportunity to look at candidates and compare them. I also encourage folks to go to anthonybrown.com to see the things that that we've done and what we stand for in the vision. In terms of the second part of the question, there are a number of things that that I've been able to do in partnership with Governor O'Malley, in partnership with the mayor and the Baltimore City delegation, as well as the council, to make a difference in Baltimore. For example, the $1.1 billion investment that we're now making in the Baltimore City schools. We authorized that, not this legislative session, but the session before. And that will result in replacing or renovating 35 schools between now and 2018. It's a major undertaking. We work closely with the mayor to make that happen. And that's only the first phase. There'll need to be a second phase if we're going to get our students out of what today are the second oldest set of schools in the state. The other thing is the public-private partnership at the Port of Baltimore. Infrastructure investment has been a big focus of mine for a number of years. It's also the cornerstone of the Brown-Ullman Jobs Plan, the five-point jobs plan, which we rolled out about 2 weeks ago. And we were able to attract a private sector partner, Ports America Chesapeake, to invest $140 million in the Port of Baltimore. Created 5,000 jobs, about half of them in construction, half of them in long-term maritime jobs. And recently, the end of last year, Amazon announced that it's going to develop, bring a fulfillment center. That's another 1,600 jobs. So we continue to look for ways to create jobs and opportunities in Baltimore City.
So, of course, some people look at that Amazon thing coming in at $10, $12 an hour job. It's not the kind of jobs that really sustain a family or a community.
There are going to be a number of, 1,600 jobs. Some will be closer to that. Some will be more than that. It's a high-tech warehouse. It's going to require a tremendous amount of skills to operate that. They're going to have over 1 million lines of inventory, a lot of volume moving through that. We're creating jobs, and the private sector is the main job creator. So the question becomes, what do we do in the public sector to promote that job, creating investments of the private sector in Maryland? So when we made that infrastructure investment to expand the Port of Baltimore, because I know you know, Mark, that come 2016, the Port of Baltimore will be only one of two ports on the eastern seaboard that will be able to accommodate the larger ships coming through the Panama Canal. And that's because the investment we made as this public-private partnership.
So let me go back to the phones here, 410-319-8888. I'll come back to my own questions, read this tweet, and come back to my next two questions. Jonathan in Baltimore, you're on the air.
How are you?
Very well, Jonathan. Welcome.
Good. Thank you. Good morning, Lieutenant Governor.
Good morning.
I just want to let you know I'm an undecided voter, so I just have just one question for you today. Education seems to be a really a theme in this election, and so I've been watching you closely, and I've been on your website, and I know that you support a pre-K program, but what else can you do as governor to make sure our students and our teachers are succeeding in this global economy?
Sure. Look, themes are, I mean, education is a theme in the history of America. That's why my father came to this country out of poverty in Kingston, Jamaica. He was the first in our family to get a college education. And I, over the last 10 months, I've rolled out about 15 policy proposals during the course of the campaign. About a full third, I think five of them deal with improving education. You mentioned the pre-K, Jonathan, in your question. That's extremely important if we're going to improve student performance, beginning with kindergarten and all the way through 12th grade. I also have a proposal to deliver more career technology education in our classrooms, recognizing that not every job that's going to be created in Maryland or in America over the next few years requires a college degree, but something more than a high school diploma. I'm proposing expanding investments in career technology education. When I was younger, we called it VoTech, but today we call it career technology education. These are career pathways in different skills, whether it's in nursing or whether it's in HVAC or the building trades, whether it's in automotive repair or law enforcement. I also have a plan to eliminate the achievement gap. We're making a lot of progress in Maryland. We actually lead the country in narrowing the achievement gap by income. But by race and ethnicity, while we are narrowing the achievement gap, still a lot of work to do. And in that regard, one of the proposals in eliminating the achievement gap is scholarships to diversify our pool of teachers. So our teaching core is more diversified. Another piece of that as well is to increase education to educators on how to identify and address disparities in the classrooms. All of this is designed to improve the teaching and learning experience in the classroom, improve graduation rates, drive down dropout rates so that our children, whether they're going to four-year college or right into the workforce, are going to be able to successfully compete.
We have a tweet in from PW. The tweet, and you can tweet us here at Mark Steiner or call 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We have a few emails. Try to get to as many as possible. You can also, as I said, call 410-319-8888. PW tweeted in, let me see, did Lieutenant Governor Brown reject corporate lobbyists' state contract and money in his campaign? If not, who does he answer to, them or us?
Yeah, look, I answer to the people of Maryland. If you look at the things that I've championed during my 16 years of service in Annapolis and in service to first the residents of Prince George County and now recently to the entire state, these are not issues that have big corporate lobbyist interests. For example, I've been fighting the fight to reduce domestic violence for 16 years, and we've made a lot of progress in reducing violence against women and children. I've focused a lot of my energy in public service on our kids in foster care, placing as many of them or reunifying them with their families, placing them for adoption, or if they're aging out of foster care, to make sure that they're ready to succeed just like my children are. And there's no big corporate lobby interests that are driving that one as well. The work I've done to establish child neglect as a criminal offense in Maryland, we were the only state that didn't. So I think if you look at my record of the things that I've worked on, you'll see that my focus is squarely on the people of Maryland. And it will continue to be as governor, whether we're creating jobs, whether we're expanding access to health care, whether we're serving veterans. And we've expanded mental and behavioral health services to veterans over the last 8 years. And these are not causes that you would typically associate with big corporate lobbyist interests.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Jeremiah in Parkville. You're on the air.
Hi, my name is Jeremiah. My question was just, why are you taking money from the healthcare people if the Maryland healthcare doesn't work?
Jeremiah.
Yeah. Jeremiah,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jeremiah. I think by healthcare, I'm going to assume that you're referencing the health benefits exchange. You know, I've been working on healthcare. I'm not new to it. I've been working on healthcare for quite some time, and over the last 8 years, we've expanded access to affordable, quality healthcare to over 500,000 Marylanders. You know, and many of them are, you know, single parents who couldn't afford health insurance, priced out of the market. Families who have had a family member with pre-existing condition and with priced out of the market. Seniors who are making the choice between, you know, groceries and prescription drugs. And we've been focused on that for 8 years. When we set out to launch Obamacare, the experience in Maryland with our website, we had the same technical challenges that President Obama had when he launched the federal website. And, you know, I sincerely regret that any Marylander was inconvenienced in accessing health insurance. And I don't think there was anyone more frustrated than I was. And that's why we took the actions that we did. We reorganized the leadership at the exchange. We refocused our vendors and fired those that didn't perform, including IBM. And after evaluating the resources and the capabilities at the exchange, because now the exchange is more than a website, it's men and women who every day are working to connect more and more Marylanders to health insurance. We plussed up the call center staff and the navigators. And as a result, we enrolled 340,000 Marylanders to health insurance. And the original goal was 260. So we rolled up our sleeves and got it done. What Marylanders wanted, they want leadership that's going to work hard to take on tough challenges and problems as they arise, and not for leaders to sort of stand on the sidelines and you know, carp and criticize for political gain.
So this issue is raised. I mean, let me just ask some questions about this, push the tad further what you were just saying. The people still, I think, want to know what happened to $125 million and how it was spent and why, since we were at the head of the curve when it came to organizing this, we did such a terrible job in the beginning as compared to, let's say, Kentucky or Connecticut, which were also near the actually started later but did a much better job of it. And what happened to $125 million? Are we going to try to get it back? And why questions aren't being asked, answered about how the details of why that was misspent. Dr. Josh Sorfstein, when he testified, I think it was in the state Senate, he actually apologized. As he said, I apologize to many Marylanders who have struggled with the website and the call center, and I regret the anxiety experienced by individuals and families who are seeking health insurance and who have been frustrated in the efforts to obtain it, Dr. Sorfstein said. And people were wondering why you as the boss didn't also want to apologize to the Maryland people. And when Nordian Healthcare took our money, A, we didn't get it back, but B, people question about why Optimum QSSI got the nod, and they point to the fact that the company that owns them gave $650,000 to the Democratic Governors Association when our governor was head of that association and got this and then got this contract. And so that $125.5 million that we lost, these are huge questions. And so I think people are kind of flummoxed why they haven't been answered.
Yeah, you got a lot packed into that
question. I did. But I wanted to get it all out in the
right,
short time we had.
Let me start with Optum. Optum is the firm that basically assisted the federal government in salvaging their website. I mean, let's step back for a second, Mark. When on October 1st, when websites were being launched around the state, with the exception of, you know, two or three states, every website had significant technological challenges. I mean, these were big IT systems. The federal government had challenges, and states around the nation. Optum came in, assisted the federal government. They're up on their feet now. Mm-hmm. Optum has assisted us. We are now adopting the technology that was successfully launched in Connecticut after a very careful review of the costs and benefits to the state. You know, there are a number of people that suggested that we should go to the federal website. Federal website was not as effective on the Medicaid side And we needed a robust Medicaid because we have, out of the 340,000 I mentioned, about 260,000 were Medicaid. And that's important. Medicaid is America's health insurance for the working poor.
Right.
So that's why we chose Connecticut over the federal government. And it's very careful cost analysis. We had consultants look at it. Our team looked at it. Even the federal government looked at our proposal and agreed they haven't finalized their review, but we're working with the federal government as they will eventually give a thumbs up to that adoption of the Connecticut technology.
Well, we have to take a brief break right now. We'll come right back. But I think we all know, at least the voters, I think, want to know what happened to the $125.5 million. When are we going to know what happened with that money and why and who was responsible where for kind of the mismanagement of it? But we'll come back to that. And our listeners and callers, we're here with Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. And we're going to break with TLC's Waterfalls. Lisa Left Eye Lopez from TLC was born on this day in 1971. We'll be right back. And like his promise is true, only my faith can undo the many chances I blew to bring my life to an end. Clear blue and unconditional skies have dried the tears from my eyes, no more lonely cries. My only leading hope is for the folk who can't cope with such an enduring pain that it keeps them in the pouring rain. Who's to blame? Ramsey Lewis. Born on this day in 1935, so we came back a little bit. In Crowd, his most famous song. And we are here now with Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. You don't like Ramsey Lewis?
No, I do. I'm just watching you. I'm just watching you have so much fun.
So when are the answers going to come about the $125.5 million that was misspent? And you were the boss.
Right. So, look, there are the Department of Legislative Services is conducting their review this summer. And there is a Department of Health and Human Services review of Maryland's health exchange rollout. I think they're on a timeline, and their timelines are according to sort of auditing best practices and not necessarily a political calendar. I think it'll be no surprise that what they'll find is that vendors with whom we contracted failed to deliver as promised. I mean, I was asked, what did you learn, and what mistakes were made? Look, we didn't go with Deloitte, which is the firm that Connecticut and the more successful firms went with. We went with IBM. You know, go figure, a household name, IBM, and didn't deliver as promised. In terms of, and I know you asked it earlier, in terms of the cost. Look, we're confident we're going to recover for Maryland taxpayers. I mean, our vendors that failed to perform, we've preserved our legal remedies against them, and we're very confident that we're going to recover for the people of Maryland. But the most important thing is to make sure that during the open enrollment in November, that we have a seamless user experience on the website so that we can meet the goals of enrolling as many Marylanders
as possible. Do you think it was a mistake we didn't have a Senate investigation?
A Maryland State Senate investigation? Well, I mean, you'll recall that the General Assembly conducted a number of open hearings.
But not a real investigation.
And, I mean, I'm not sure what you, I mean, they I don't know, I mean, I'm not sure what you're referring to in terms of a real investigation. I mean, they had a number of hearings. They reviewed documents. The Department of Legislative Services, which is sort of their staffing and auditing arm, reviewed the documents, came back with a report, and they, the General Assembly, are going to rely on the Department of Legislative Services review that begins, I think, in June.
So let me be fair here to my listeners at 410-319-8888. Eric in Pasadena, you're on the air.
I'm a college student, so I'm on a pretty tight budget, and I was wondering, how can the Lieutenant Governor, as governor, make higher education more affordable for lots of students who are in my situation?
Well, Eric, first of all, I wish you the very best in your college studies. Over the last 8 years, Maryland has positioned itself as the number one state in a college affordability when you look at the percentage increase in our tuition at our public universities and colleges. In the 4 years before the O'Malley-Brown administration, tuition was going up 10% a year for 4 years. Now it's closer to 3.3. On the campaign, I have renewed my commitment and made a pledge to hold tuition at 3%. Other things that we can do is certainly to continue to invest in top-flight facilities and top-flight facilities, attract top-flight professors who can then compete successfully for grant dollars and research dollars, which always help bring down the costs in delivering education. So investments in facilities and holding tuition. And then the third piece is as we continue to pivot towards more needs-based scholarships as opposed to merit-based scholarships, although there will always be a place for merit-based scholarships.
So can we hold tuitions down? They're going to rise.
No, we're going to we'll hold them at 3%. We'll hold them at 3%.
A year?
A year, which if you look at the inflation index in higher education, it's probably closer to 8 or 9%.
If you become a governor, then we can come back and have a longer talk about higher education.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. So 410-319-8888 is the number here. A lot of people calling in, so I'm going to try to turn this over to you. We only have like 5 or 7 minutes left before Lieutenant Governor has to leave. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Evelyn in Pikesville.
Hi, yeah. I was just wondering why the Lieutenant Governor thinks it's a mere inconvenience that thousands of Marylanders couldn't get health care through the website that was the failed health care exchange.
Well, that was the question. It was something about inconvenience.
So what was the question, Evelyn? I'm sorry?
Yeah, I was wondering why the Lieutenant Governor thinks it's a mere inconvenience that thousands of Marylanders couldn't get health care through the failed health care exchange.
It's not more than inconvenience that the thousands of people could not get health care through the health care exchange. And this goes along with a tweet, which is again from Matthew Loftus, who wrote in, how does he expect to manage the state well when the health exchange he was in charge of still has clients waiting months later?
Yeah, so our goal was 260,000, we were able to enroll 340,000 because notwithstanding the technical, challenges with the exchange, we plussed up the staff and had to do a lot of manual workarounds. You know, what Marylanders are looking for in their leaders are leaders who are going to stick to it even when you face challenges, some foreseen, some unforeseen, and not walk away from it. Over the course of the next 4 years, there are going to be big challenges, big issues, some that we can see, some that we can't, solutions that we have in mind. Some will work and will work well, and some will work not so well. And the question is, what are your leaders doing in the face of those challenges? So as we roll up our sleeves and plussed up at the call centers and the navigators and refocused our vendors and changed leadership at the project, we were able to connect 340,000 Marylanders. We passed some emergency legislation to ensure that Marylanders wouldn't slip through the cracks. We worked with the carriers to extend deadlines to ensure that Marylanders who were in the queue and demonstrated an attempt to enroll through the exchange, we would work with them through the completion of their enrollment. And I think that's what Marylanders are looking for, that stick-to-itness.
410-319-8888. I'll try to get two more questions in here, and I apologize to all the people calling and writing in. We did want to have the lieutenant governor, stay for an hour, but he only had 40 minutes on his schedule. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Michelle in Bethesda, Maryland, you're on the air.
Mark and Lieutenant Brown. As you know, the cleanup of the Chesapeake Bay has been a really big priority for the state, and the agricultural sector is the number one source of pollution. Governor O'Malley has been very overt in his support for Purdue and these other big companies, going as far as directly interfering with a lawsuit that local Marylanders brought that they thought was important for cleaning up their waterway. Do you plan to continue to protect these big corporations that reap billions of dollars of sales every year, or will you hold them accountable for managing their waste stream like every other industrial sector has to do in order to meet our bay cleanup goals?
Thank you, Michelle.
Yeah, my goal is on protecting the bay. We have done a number of things over the years, some successful, some that will give us the foundation to build on, like putting more land in a program open space, enrolling more farmland in the cover crop program, limiting the use of septic tanks in large development. Of course, the much controversial stormwater management facilities fee program that we've instituted, as well as our focus on transit-oriented and smart growth. Regarding agricultural use and its impact on the Bay, I certainly support a much closer and rigorous monitoring, particularly of the pesticides and the nutrients that go into the soil as a result of that activity, monitoring it, making sure that we are complying with our nutrient management goals, which in a few short years they're going to be reevaluated. And I want to make sure that Maryland's in a good position and that we are, in fact, protecting the Bay.
Well, before we let you go, I know you have to run, but there was a question here that fits, is going from what Michelle just asked. The question was from Rick Vatchell. And what specifically would you have done from differently from Governor Martin Amell in the last 8 years, and what, if anything, would you do differently from him should you become governor? And that email made me think of something Michelle said, unlike the governor who had an agreement to implement the phosphorus management tool, let it slide by. Said, oh, we're going to wait again. And that was at the behest of Purdue and a lot of other industries on the Eastern Shore saying, no, we don't want this. So I think that was the heart of what Michelle was asking. And so did you agree with that, pushing off PMT? Did you agree with kind of those kind of way of not resolving the stuff that's affecting the Bay?
Look, what I agree with as we're going forward is working with the agricultural community, the environmental community, local government to make sure that we are doing our very best with a set of regulations that enable us to monitor the nutrients, the pesticides, the chemicals that are being applied, particularly in the Eastern Shore, so that we can reduce the negative impact of that.
But was it a mistake for the governor to not push what was already agreed upon with the PMT to be done?
Mark, as you can imagine, Mark, over the last year, I've been asked to, on, I don't know, 1,000 times if every decision by Governor O'Malley was a mistake.
No, I know, but
I'm looking forward. I mean, I don't drive in the rear view. I'm looking forward. Martin O'Malley's made a number of decisions. For the most part, they've been very good for the state. That's why we've got the best in the nation schools. That's why we've been able to drive crime down.
But this particular one, you have no...
We haven't seen in 3 decades. And we have been making progress on the environment. So my goal moving forward is looking at the decisions that Governor O'Malley has made. What are the ones that work? What are the ones that don't work? And building on what works so that we can, you know, improve and make greater progress on the Bay.
Well, I know you have to go. I want to again apologize to our listeners that we can get all these. We have like 7 people still left on the line, and we have 3 or 4 more emails and at least 3 or more tweets. But with any luck, maybe we'll have Lieutenant Governor back here one more time before the 28-day limit, 30 days.
28 days. June 24th is the primary, Mark.
Maybe we can get you on before that. Lieutenant Governor, thanks so much for joining
us. Thank you.
Folks, take a very brief break and come back with Edward Wyckoff Williams. And I look at all your emails. The ones we couldn't answer, I will respond to myself on the email. So I want to thank you for that. We're going out with Free Willin' Bob Dylan. One of his first great album was released today on this day in 1963. We're going out with Oxford Town.
He went down to Oxford Town, guns and clubs followed him down, all because his face was brown. Better get away from Oxford Town.